you flip me? Here we go. It is the Octopod Live Dive every Friday morning. We're so glad that you're here. And here we are. Look, he's Dap. He's the Montgomery radio legend. And he's with us today. Can I pull the curtain back?
Do it.
What do you mean, can I flip you? Do you mean like do that?
Perfect. Yes.
But here's the thing, Dap. It's not just the two of us today.
Right. That was a teaser. See, that was a spoiler. Okay. Yeah. That I'm glad you caught that. That was okay. For those that came on, it was kind of a little bit of a tease. So yeah, okay. There you go.
All right. I can flip you, but I don't know how long we're going to be like this because boy, the capital city is shining today for everybody ready for the live dive. And by the way, are y'all fired up or are y'all just kind of casually here? Are y'all fired up for the live dive? Are we ready to go? Are we ready to go? See, kind of, yeah, I like that. Let's freaking boog, Jacob J. It's football season, dadgummit. Not only do we have the Montgomery radio legend with us today, we have a Montgomery football legend with us today. When you think Montgomery football, there's really one name that you think of before all others, and that is the one, the only, Brett Edens is with us on the show today, ladies and gentlemen. The Montgomery football legend.
The check is in the mail, Brad. Thank you.
No, this is awesome. We have talked about this before. And now I've got to, because I want to match the graphic and I'm a little OCD about this, I kind of want to be in the middle. I want to be flanked by legends. So
go ahead.
I'm going to move Dap right there. And now I got a legend on this side and I got a legend on this side and all is well. All is well. So, Brett, thank you for doing this. What in the world compelled you to say yes to this invitation? I just have to know.
You're one of my bosses on the game day broadcast. I just felt like maybe this would get me, one less segment with Jason rambling about, strawberry pie in Mississippi or something. So, just going to hold this one to the side for later in the season.
Oh, gosh, you're so misinformed if you think I'm one of your bosses on game days. Or if you think anything will save anybody from Jason rambling on about strawberry stuff. Dap, let's ask you the question that this, honest to goodness, was it two years ago or last year, Brett? This became a running thing on the network pregame show. Is a cookie a dessert or a snack?
Oh, it's a snack.
I think exclusively a snack. So if you have a cookie after your dinner, that's not dessert.
No, let me tell you where it becomes a dessert. Traditionally, with my ethnic upbringing, at the a wedding reception, the groom's mother does what's called a cookie table. Uh-huh. So they have the wedding cakes. So they, in this Italian tradition, they get this cookie table, and it is one of the most glorious things you'll ever see. As far as the amount of cookies and the variety of cookies, that, and yes, two things can be true at the same time. That is when it's dessert. But if you're just like, I'm going to grab that cookie. I'm hungry. I just want to grab a cookie. Then it's a snack.
Okay.
Brett, I think three or more. I think three or more cookies can be counted as dessert. A cookie, unless it's one of those really done up ones, is probably a snack. Is a cookie cake a single cookie or is that?
Oh,
see, that's why you're here, Brett. That's why.
Got me. I'm going to tell you something else.
That's why you're here.
When people, and one Oreo cookie, and people, which I wasn't allowed to do as a kid, my parents forbid me as an Oreo to open the Oreo up, lick the cream filling inside, and I couldn't do that. My mom considered that bratty. She said, you're not doing that. You're eating the whole cookie. If you take that cream filling and dispose of it, then it's definitely a snack. Can't be a dessert. That's really limited.
This is a fantastic. This is great. I'm looking at Dap too much. LSU 2004 taught us, don't divert your focus from Brett like that.
Exactly.
You get planted on the turf at Jordan-Hare Stadium. All right, I do want to talk some football. And so, Daryl, we'll just kind of jump in here. Guys in the chat, jump in here as well. you've told the LSU story a bunch and a bunch of places. I want to go back to, like, was 2000 your first year here?
Yes, yes. Second season.
Yeah, that was a huge year. Like, we talked about Rudy Johnson having one of the best debuts in Auburn history from an individual perspective. And we lost Rudy within the last year, sadly. Just like, I mean, you knew about Auburn. Your family's connected, obviously, to Auburn. But what was 2000 like on campus?
On campus, it was neat just to kind of see, because I'd been around so much, to see that kind of hype and belief kind of grow as the season went. It wasn't a great season numerically, but the way that people kind of saw what it was supposed to be, and that kind of, you know, the base layer, the foundation of what Auburn football should be, was kind of being built that season with solid play, solid defense. Tuberville kind of being the riverboat gambler and making some surprise calls on people. And then Rudy Johnson, just kind of, you know, the power running game that he brought, where he was so strong but also so shifty. Kind of my rude awakening to Rudy was learning the defensive end role during two-a-days. And, in high school, you could kind of run around and try to make plays and spin out of stuff and just go tackle the ball. College, it was a little different, and I spun out of a run block and was about an inch away from Rudy sprinting through the C-gap with his head down, and Terry Price stopping the film and making me understand that I spun out and didn't see him, didn't make the tackle at all. And he said, yeah, if his helmet hits you in the chin, your jaw's broken and you're out. You may never play football again. And it was weird to think I'm a strong side defensive end.
Yeah.
And, oh, no, if this running back hits me wrong. Now, he was probably a 245-pound 22-year-old running back, so it was a little different. But it was very much an awakening to, like, this is a man's game at this level.
Yeah, Ronnie's talked about how he thought he might play his first year as a true freshman, and he saw Rudy's calves, and he's like, oh, no, this is going to be a red shirt year for me.
Yeah. That redshirt class, and I've told kids in the past, like, there's no shame in redshirting. I was really bothered when I found out I was getting redshirted. And then I looked around, and it was like Ronnie Brown, Jason Campbell, all these guys, you know, Carlos Rogers, Carlos Dansby, all those guys are getting there. I'm like, oh, I remember watching them work out and do stuff during the summer and get recruited. Yeah. And I was like, all right, maybe there's no real shame in this at all.
That's crazy to think that Carlos Dansby redshirted.
Yeah.
Like, can you imagine a guy with that talent? Like, you just find a place for him. That the game's younger now.
Well, he literally moved around from, like, safety to linebacker to tight end to D-end to wide receiver during two-a-days. Mm-hmm. So we're going over to the intramural fields, walking over there, and there's groups kind of talking about – I heard Carlos was in this meeting room today, so he's going to be with y'all's group. And you can see the guys from that position be like, okay, good. That's one spot that I kind of – yeah, maybe I've got a little bit better shot now that he's out of my room.
Yeah, I think three things come to mind for me when I think of that 2000 season. Number one, that redshirted core was instrumental in that 2004 undefeated team, period. I mean, that group redshirted together, they were the foundation. Number two, just very much out of nowhere, that team won the West. That 2000 team won the West and played Florida and Rexy Boy in the SEC championship. And then I was in the stadium when Rudy Johnson ran off that run against Wyoming. And to me, again, to this day, it's the greatest single run I've ever seen in person in my life, period. With the tackles he broke, I mean, you know, he was breaking tackles at the line of scrimmage, breaking tackles downfield, breaking tackles at the 3-yard line to go into the goal line, to go to the score. Just amazing. And so, you know, you did feel that renewed, because there was some foundation laid in 99, the LSU win, you know, with Tuberville, and it just kind of fizzled out. They had to beat Alabama to win to go to a bowl game. Then Sean Alexander had a great game in Jordan-Hare. But that team laid the foundation for the next year that won the West. So it was kind of cool to see things starting to bloom.
How much was would you have been at Auburn regardless of who the head coach was? Or was it because of your roots?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I really like Coach Joe Witt. I mean, technically started recruiting me when I was very, very little. He knew my parents for a long time, from his time at Vigor, where my mom went, to coming up to Montgomery and coaching at Robert E. Lee, which is, we grew up right by there in Montgomery. And then when he came to Auburn, they just kind of knew Coach Witten. So he was my recruiter. And it was always funny to have him on the phone, and then Rodney Garner would call later and say, look, I know you're not coming to my school, but I just want to make Joe Witt actually work for 1 week. And they just kind of laugh. Then they get on the phone with my dad and talk about stuff. And I'm like, I kind of thought I was getting recruited, but it was kind of a foregone conclusion, I think, to a certain degree. But yeah, I mean, I liked Auburn, but I really liked Coach Turbo and kind of the way that he talked about football and life and kind of plans for all the players that were going to be involved and how we were going to build stuff.
Rev, the Rev is checking in with a $10 super chat. Thank you very much, RBB. My high school coach actually coached Carlos Dansby at Woodlawn. He told me once that Carlos was going to have a long, exciting career. He deserves the Hall of Fame. Well, he did. He did have
I did not like Carlos initially. I played against him in AAU basketball, and he was a basketball guy, very talented basketball player, probably could have gone to a good school to play basketball. Mm-hmm. And when, like, the state's top 12 players came out, he was in front of me, and I was not happy about that because I was like, he's a basketball guy. He's not a football guy. This is ridiculous. Yeah. 20 years later, he's still in the NFL. So it's like, maybe the Montgomery advertiser knew what they were talking about that week.
Dap, Robert Johnson was from Montgomery, too.
Yeah, Jeff Davis. Jefferson Davis, yeah.
Part of a really good group that came through there.
Yeah, I mean, and when I hear Edens attached to basketball and AAU, I got triggered because I still felt like your brother should have played at Auburn and not Arkansas, but that's a discussion for another day.
That was a heartbreaker, but it worked. Yeah, Lord works in mysterious ways. He loves the state of Arkansas and he's got a beautiful family up there, and it's been great for him. But Robert Johnson was a big help for me because we became friends just through being around Montgomery and doing sports. And he was one that I would leave the Trinity workouts in the morning and go over to Jeff Davis and work out with him and some of the Jeff Davis guys. And then they would do kind of like Skelly. And so I was getting to cover Robert Johnson every day as a linebacker, thinking, well, this is what I'm going to do every day. And I moved, obviously, to defensive end. But that was a really big challenge for me to go there and go against those guys every day during the summer. And my brother would go there and work out and shoot basketball and do stuff. So it was a really fun group. Watching Robert Johnson – watching my dad's face when Robert Johnson jumped off our diving board and the diving board bends down and tips the water. And I mean, he was 265 pounds in high school as a tight end and could run and jump and do stuff. You're like, this is a different person and a great guy too. Love Robert.
I've always said the two greatest tight ends I ever saw at the high school level was one that went to your former alma mater, but Tommy Trott was a great high school tight end, and then Robert Johnson just looked like a man. I mean, even against Robert E. Lee and some of these schools with the rivalry, it was just ungodly how good he was in high school.
Oh, yeah.
Some of the comments in the chat have led me to a survey or a ranking that I want to put out there for you guys and for the audience. But before we do that, like, what are the best hits that you've ever witnessed in an Auburn football game? All right. So as you have a couple minutes to think about that, I want to tell you why I'm thankful that Blake played basketball at Arkansas and not at Auburn, because it enabled him to form connections in Fayetteville that allowed our broadcast team to walk right into the busiest barbecue place in Hogville last year, line out the door around the corner. Okay. And they've got this giant, the biggest table right in the middle of the restaurant. It might as well have been on a riser in the middle of the restaurant with spotlights on it. Okay.
It was a little uncomfortable. I mean, we ate and had a good time, but yeah, it was a little bit uncomfortable.
But he knows the owner so well and has a great connection that he's like, hey, I got some guys coming in. My brother's part of this group and it's a radio crew, it's sports info people. And gosh, the look on some of those Arkansas fans' faces. When we're in all of our Auburn gear and we're passing them to just, hey, y'all been waiting a little while? All right, we're going
to the chef's table with the big, you know, master spread.
We're going
Wright's Barbecue. My brother's talked about Wright's Barbecue for years, and I kind of brushed it off. It's like, yeah, I mean, we've got good barbecue here too. This is great. That was really good. Also appreciated the fact that part of the athletic administration staff kind of said, no, we're going to go do our own thing for dinner. We'll see y'all later. And then they walked in. They slowly shuffled by in the line while we were just kind of picking up sausage and ribs and brisket and all kinds of stuff. Yeah, Wright's Barbecue in Fayetteville, if you get up there, definitely a spot to hit.
Baptist, no exaggeration. The line was out the door and around the corner. And I mean, the table's in the center of the room. And it's not like then we placed our order and waited. They just started bringing platters full of stuff. Like,
and it's a big restaurant. Like when we pulled up, I thought, oh, there's not going to be a line. This place is big, but there was, and it just kept growing as we, I mean, we took up three tables, so we kind of took up some space, but that was good.
It's one of my
slept good that night.
Yeah, no, we all did. Yeah. It's one of my, and then Auburn went out and like took care of business and defense dominated, and Dap, we all thought, well, here we go. The ship's righted and it's going to be a great second half of the season.
That's right. This was a couple years ago?
This was last year.
Okay, gotcha.
This was last year.
Yeah, we started off hot and kind of let them come back on some iffy plays. And then I think – do we have two pick sixes? Or we had a pick six, and then I think Pleasant got one that maybe didn't run back, but kind of killed it for them. Six. And then we
had another interception late to seal it, too.
Yep. Yeah, that's what it was. And we hit a field goal late because I was sitting right under the uprights for it. So I was like, all right, if we can hit this one, it'll – put it away.
That's the Rashawn Pleasant, Alex McPherson game, because those two won the game with the field goals and the turnover. And remember, the kick return to start the second half by Pleasant got the engine rolling a little bit because Auburn had gone down, right before the halftime. So that kind of got some momentum as well.
Oh yeah,
I'm excited to see Rashawn Pleasant.
Me too.
I'm looking forward to hit like Kenny earn a starting role. I'm looking forward to that.
Cornerback's one of the positions that I think we're going to – you could see some fluidity there throughout the season, especially kind of start. I think they're going to want to put experience out there and then kind of figure out who's the best guy.
10-time champion with a $5 Super Chat. Super Chat questions go straight to the front of the line, by the way, in case you're new. All other questions might – you know, we're going to get to some of those too. It's not exclusively the Super Chat, but just as a matter of housekeeping. $5 donation for a Tiger Tailgate Show pedicure question segment before the football game against Florida. You guys ever get pedicures?
I have. I ain't gonna lie. But I didn't go by myself. Let me get that right out in the open. I went with my wife, and we went together. So it was a couples thing. I don't know if Summerall rolls up in there by himself and gets his pedicure. But, yeah, I've gotten them before.
I kind of doubt he rolls up in there by himself. Don't you? Don't you
I
doubt
it? It's being kind of a couple's thing, or I don't know. It's to each their own. If that's his thing, whatever. I think kind of chirping back at people about it makes a bigger deal about it than it should be. If that's your thing, whatever, it's your thing. But if you've got to try to overly defend it.
That was my point yesterday, Brett. That was
and
my
maybe again, maybe he's joking again, and we're just not picking up on it. But
well, if he's joking, he's got a sense of humor not a lot of people are able to pick up on because it really doesn't seem like it. But it was like, come on, it's reasonable. People are going to pick at that. With it. Don't clap back. That's like, and somebody told me yesterday, it's the hit dog that hollers.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. The name that Zach loves so much, $5 Super Chat. When Coleman lines up against Crawford, who has the advantage since they both practiced against each other? Is this a Cam Coleman, Jay Crawford question?
I guess it is when Texas plays Ole Miss.
All right, sure. Cam Coleman has the advantage. He's Cam Coleman.
I hadn't thought about either one, to be honest with you, since they no longer wear orange and blue. No.
Yeah. I'm with Darryl. I didn't even realize that those two played each other this season. I would think Cam probably has the advantage.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that'll be a good matchup. Fun game to watch, I'm sure.
It will be a fun game to watch. Yeah, Luke says, I hope both lose. So there you go. All right, hardest hit in an Auburn football game. It started by someone in the chat referencing Rashard Gilyard's hit in that 2000 Wyoming game that sent the guy's helmet flying 20, 25 yards down the field.
Gilyard, that was a really good, just solid squared up hit. And even if the helmet doesn't go flying, it's kind of like a Ronnie Lott hit where, you stay on your feet and the guy goes down. But That was a solid one. There's one that doesn't get a lot of coverage, but it was Vanderbilt and I guess 03. And what they were doing on their kick returns was a double wedge, which is very 1930s, like Army-Navy. But Tuberville and them essentially moved Brandon Jacobs to be a wedge buster.
Oh, yeah.
And we did it like once at practice, and everybody was like, oh, that's scary. The weirder thing to think about is if Brandon hadn't gotten there first, Tim Duckworth was about 2 yards behind him. Tim Duckworth ended up being an offensive lineman. He was a defensive tackle at the time. And they put him as a wedge buster. And I think it happened. They ran it two times in a row. And from then on, they were just like, do a touchback. Just let it touchback. Don't try to return this.
What a great.
Those were ones where you see and you're kind of like, that's dangerous to a certain degree. And then obviously junior shot on Reggie Brown is one where it's just kind of such a clean lottery shot of the guy extending to try to catch it and junior catching him just right. That was a fun one.
Yeah, mine, obviously, and I'm not just saying this because Brett's on here with us, that when anytime someone's cleats come off the ground 8 feet in the air, you talk about de-cleating somebody. That one was, and I was going to mention junior Rose Green's, keeping it with the Auburn theme, Champ Anthony's against Arkansas a couple of years ago. But the one that, and I hate to say this because it happened against Auburn, but this is really going old school here, and all three of us probably witnessed it. The hit on Stacy Danley in 1990 against Ohio State in the bowl game, when Dye came out and said run off the field, probably was the most violent hit I've ever seen involving an Auburn player. And he did get up and run off the field and then had a really good rest of the half. But that one was extremely, extremely violent.
How about in that same era, Carlos Cheatham laying out Reggie Cobb in 88?
Do you guys remember the famous quote that he said after that?
No, what was it?
They asked him about it, and I wasn't even living here then, but I read it in the paper, that the USA Today, they asked him about it, and he said, yeah, I waxed the dude. When they asked him about the hit, his sentence was, yeah, I waxed the dude, and he did. That was a brutal hit, too.
Let's see here. Another from the Reverend, $5 Super Chat. Top five all-time hits, Rose Green on Brown, Nick Fairley on Aaron Murray, Takeo on Jamal Lewis, Trey Blackmon on Tim Tebow, Kevin Green on Boomer Esiason. Tell you what, the hit on Boomer Esiason was pretty strong, too.
That's a fun list just with the names involved. You kind of forget about some of those, but yeah.
Well, and Varner Beck is calling out Owen Papo in 2022. I got to tell you, I don't remember that one specifically.
Penn State. It was McSorley, I believe, was the quarterback at Penn State. And that game started out so promising with the way Papo just laid the wood to him.
Yeah.
And then it just went downhill after that.
So much of 22 is in a part of my brain that is filed away, covered up with a tarp, and locked up. I just don't recall much of 22. I do remember that Penn State game. I've done this too much in July. I've picked at stuff that's negative, but too much of, like, Penn State 22 was the game where we all went, oh.
It should have ended after that, in my opinion.
Oh, this is going to be a problem.
Yeah.
This isn't where it needs to be.
Yeah.
So that's my memory of 22, not a crushing hit from Owen Papo. Owen Papo is one of those linebackers, though, that could have been on some of those late 90s, the 2000 Auburn defenses that were just tough and unrelenting. He'd have been a good fit on those.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. What else do we have? What else you guys want to talk about today?
I'm just glad that I got late notice on this and didn't tell my friends, because if you can pay to get specific questions or comments out there, you could have made some money, Brad, but it also may have to be a late night thing.
It would have been the farewell episode. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Brad would have moved the picture behind him like in Cheers, like Ted Danson did, because that would have been the finale.
Well, look, we don't have to. They don't automatically pop up on the screen. I do have to click a button to get them up on
the screen. Okay, good.
So I don't have an animal fact for everybody today. I do apologize for that. I do have something else fun, though, since we've discussed the hardest hit. And now this is the last day of July. It's almost football month. What's your favorite Auburn football cheer? All right. Is it Bottegetta, Trackem, Two Bits, or it's great to be an Auburn Tiger, or something else?
I'll give you an animal fact and then tell you mine. Watching Alone, bald eagles do not get their white capped head or their yellow beak until they're about 3 or 4 years old. They're totally brown until then. So animal fact of the day. That's a freebie, Brad. Next one, you get billed.
So they do, in fact, go bald. Like they're not.
Technically,
yeah.
I guess so, yeah.
How about that?
Maybe that's why. I would say it's great to be an Auburn Tiger because I feel like we do that after wins. Mm-hmm. And sometimes even after disappointing losses, it's more of a solidarity cheer. But it's one I think you feel like after a big win, that one comes out. Of those four, that would be my choice.
Yep.
Yeah, mine too. It used to be glory, glory to old Auburn when they chanted that. But then obviously another school shares that with us. And so that kind of dumbed it down for me, but I like it's great to be an Auburn Tiger, and I think for the exact reasons, because it's usually after a win. I mean, you're chanting that and you're professing that, so that one always holds a special meaning.
Can I tell you my favorite it's great to be an Auburn Tiger cheer of all time? Which game?
Yes.
It was the 2009 Iron Bowl after the game.
Yeah.
2009 Iron Bowl, after the loss, you had led the whole thing. It was heartbreaking, you know, and they ran 38 pick plays and got away with every one of them and then scored and whatever.
What?
All right. Yeah.
That's why Clemson and Hunter Renfrow was so glorious.
Yeah, sure.
But
after that game, the fans stayed and they chanted, it's great to be an Auburn Tiger, and it felt different. And I'm big on emotion and feeling and that kind of thing when it comes to football. And I remember being in the press box in the radio booth producing and just going, this is different. Something's coming. And we didn't know Cam Newton was coming, but it felt like there was a wave of something really positive coming after that game. So
I've said all along, and I could be committed for this, and we'll see how it plays out at the end of the year. But I have said that something has, I cannot shake the feeling, it is absolutely gnawing at me, that this year is going to be very similar to the 2019. I can see Auburn starting out 4-0, 5-0, like they did in 2009. Then they hit that wall in the middle of the season, and then there was hope at the end. It was a springboard for things to come. Now, I'm not predicting a national title next year. I'm just saying in itself, in a vacuum, this year, new coach, you know, everything, and just feels like this could be similar the way we start the season, maybe hitting some bumps in the road in the middle, and then hope springing eternal again at the end.
Brett, were you still in New York in 09?
No, I was not. It was a quick cup of coffee one season there in 05.
All right.
They only had three Pro Bowl defensive ends. They didn't need a Husky slow one to stick around.
I wasn't asking that to poke. I legitimately didn't know if you were still there in 09. That was not a – All right, moving on to Barner Becca with Becca's Super Chat here. What's everyone's favorite Auburn tradition? Mine will always be striking up the band. Give me chills every single time. Favorite Auburn tradition from the panel.
I'm going to let Brett go first because he has more of a
– I think for football, it's probably Tiger Walk, just because that's – so many schools have copied a version of that, and I know they probably had something – but from the 89 game on, that really has just kind of been a huge consistent Auburn thing that even when I've had friends from other schools come visit and see it, they're like, oh, ours isn't like that. You know, like, yeah, I told you all week this was going to be different. So Tiger Walk's one. I can still remember going down that hill by the dorm and giving my mom a hug, shaking my dad's hand, and then walking in, and that being kind of like, you know, it's game day, time to get ready for work. And then Rolling Tumors Corner is just so unique for Auburn. I think that's one of the things that crosses all sports and graduations and Auburn people. And it's such a unique and interesting thing to be a part of over there. People, you know, you see couples getting pictures and people take their kids over there. I've got three little ones and we run them over there every chance we can to roll tumors. And for some reason they want to bring giant wads of damp, unused toilet paper back in the car, back to the house to remember that. And we're like, just once they fall asleep, we'll throw it away. But it's a pretty legit fire hazard until then. But those are two that really stand out to me. But there's a lot of great ones.
Yeah, tumors for me, and I think it's because it encompasses many sports. It's not just a football tradition. You win a golf national title, you roll tumors. Basketball, going after the first Final Four in 2019 was one of the greatest memories. And I've actually taken people to tumors from out of town that went to a game, and it's always also associated with winning. You don't roll tumors unless you get a win, but it encompasses multiple sports. And even in an individual basis, like if Suni Lee was to win a gold medal in the Olympics, or Jackson Koivin wins the U.S. Open, when he wins the U.S. Open one day, they'll roll tumors to represent an Auburn athlete doing something great. I think that's why it's the best tradition for me.
That's good. Those are the big capital letter traditions, and I love those. One small thing that always gets me kind of – it flips a switch, even though we'll have been on the air for 2 hours already on the broadcast. It flips a switch when the band does their march around the stadium and they're playing that drum cadence. I know the name of it. I just can't think of it right now. But that specific drumline cadence, and then they – the band stops and they do the four corners, and then they go back into the cadence – that is like an immediate, like, all right, here we go now. We've had our fun with the tailgate show, and now it's time to, like, let's get ready to play football. Yeah. Let's go.
The band walkout video is kind of the official start of the game. Yeah. And that it's wild to think that, the band walkout video comes on and the drum major spins it and spikes it, and you kind of get chill bumps and you're ready to go.
10 time, another super chat. Thank you, 10 time. I grew up across the street, literally from Toomer's Corner. Was 5 years old, hanging out our living room window overlooking tumors for the first time ever in 89. That's amazing. What a great memory. What a great story.
That is. And I think in the chat, Annie makes a great point. She mentions the eagle flying, which, is one of the ones that I think everybody thinks of. If you think about Auburn as a school, that entity, and how sometimes they get made fun of or joked for, using – they have three of the best traditions in all of college football. Most colleges are lucky to have one. Tiger Walk, Rolling Tumors Corner, and the Eagle Flying are three of the best. And anytime somebody comes on campus from ESPN, they highlight those. Auburn has three. Three tremendous traditions where most schools are lucky to have one.
The Eagle Flying at the World Cup Argentina event, and the people around me going, that's a real eagle. That's a real eagle. And you're like, it's so just common to us. We're just like, it's going to happen. Like, that's a real eagle. I got it. You're like, what did you think was going to happen?
I thought it was AI. And I got to admit, as a Pittsburgh guy, watching Philadelphia fans get excited with the eagle flying bothers me. But I let it go because Auburn supersedes that. So
good stuff. Good stuff. There was a cheer. We don't do it anymore. Going back to the cheer topic. Do you remember hearing Brett while you were playing the student section, the get some what yardage? That one had a very small window, but I loved that. That was
I feel like that was one from when I was a kid too. Like you had, part of that too is just the mic man's voice on it, where it's almost like they don't articulate. It's almost just vibrations at certain pitches, and you know the word to it. Like you can do, that's 100%. And so, you got those kind of cheers. I do kind of wish we would steal from LSU and spell out Tigers or something like that. I think we've got that to do. Some other stuff, but it's so many big, unique traditions that are tied to Auburn that. Yeah, I think Daryl's right. We're very lucky to have those.
Oh, I've got one here. Please let me jump at this. I'm so glad. Go ahead.
Yeah, Jacob J, Super Chat, $5. What's y'all's least favorite tradition that opposing teams do? The Vandy ship horn on third down is annoying for Jacob J.
I can say this because we have played them twice. They're not a normal opponent, but I absolutely loathe the West Virginia musket shooting. I hate it. It's loud. It's hillbilly. It's redneck. It is.
That's Pittsburgh in him right there.
And then Auburn plays them and they score and they do that. And I'm just like, I cannot stand the musket shooting. So there you go.
Nick with a $10 super chat. Thank you so much, Nick. I have pictures from 2000, 2001. We're on the field with our names going across the stadium in the background. Experienced Tiger Walk. We're able to view the locker rooms. This is like a VIP experience, but 25 years ago. Nick, what an awesome story. That's cool.
They're a little different. I'll tell Jacob that the Vandy horn is annoying, but being on the sideline last year, Mississippi State has professionalized the artificial noise game with their cowbells, which should be banned. That's maybe a whole different topic.
Yeah.
Vanderbilt has two super fans, I guess you call them, that scream into microphones with high-pitched voices, and they pump it out over the speakers to make artificial noise during the game. And I think, Brad, I was talking to – I can't remember if it was Jacob or Britt that was the producer. And I'm like,
yeah,
this no- – the noise coming – the something about the decibel level or something is honestly irritating me to where I'm getting violent. Like, this is the way that they did that. And, like, the ship horn was a relief from it. But that and, you know, the Mississippi State cowbell thing, you've got to do something about that. That's like bumpers at a bowling alley. You know, it shouldn't really count.
10 time with a $5 super chat. Prove me wrong. No football blue blood has a first down cheer like Ole Miss and Vandy. I'm glad you went there. I was going to bring this up as an example. Any place where they make way too much of a production, where they're way too dramatic about a first down. That's another first down.
And they pause for effect into the drama, the PA announcers, before they say first down. It's a freaking first down.
It's 10 yards. Come
on. It's 10 yards. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know, because I haven't been enough. I think it's one of those things that grates on the opposing team and opposing fans. And so I'm not against anything that does that.
Okay.
So I can kind of get behind it to a certain degree. I do think it is annoying. I think it's overdone. But it is one of those things where, you know, you hear it enough and maybe your eye kind of starts to twitch, or you hear Rocky Top for the fifth time in the first quarter and they haven't scored a touchdown yet. And you're like, this is kind of overkill. So I can see both sides of that one for sure.
Can you imagine Rick Smith doing that at Jordan-Hare? Can you imagine Rick doing this prolonged first down call?
I'll tell you one a sneaky little tradition. You just said it, that Carl Stevens started when he announces the time for those outside the stadium.
Yeah,
I love that. That gives me, if you're outside tailgating, for those of you outside the stadium, 60 minutes still kick. That's great. That's great.
That is a good one.
I like that so much. We incorporated it into the radio broadcast. Like, we back time so that we can hit that and carry it live. So if you're listening on the radio or on your phone or wherever, and you're not in the stadium, you'll hear it as if you were in the stadium. Yeah, the correct Jordan-Hare Stadium time is
I love it.
1:37 p.m. We're exactly 60 minutes away. Yeah. No, it's great. It's great. Okay. Good stuff. Good stuff. All right. Brett, thoughts on I don't know if you will agree to come back on before the start of the football season. So, thoughts on this team before fall practice number 1.
I think they've got a good base down from spring. I think DJ Durkin being in his third year means a lot to a lot of the guys on defense and understanding their goals and what they do in specific situations. So that's good. I think Alex Golish bringing a guy, at least one guy in each position on the offense, kind of help coach the other guys up, show them how to do things. And them getting so much of the offense into the spring is big. I think it's going to come down to finding cornerbacks that can make plays and offensive line chemistry. If we can get those two things to show up, it could be a really special year. But I'm expecting really solid football. I like Alex Golish. Everything I think we've seen about him from the hire to today has been just solid meat and potatoes football guy that wants to go out there and build a program and stand on winning and not on, you know, being an influencer or anything else like that. So I'm really excited about what we have to look forward to.
Next time we have you on, we will tell all of your friends. We'll get a big text chain going. We'll let them know that super chats go to the front of the line. We did want to get this one in from 10 time. Thank you very much for the super chat. If a fight song is played immediately after a touchdown, that's one of the opposing traditions that he doesn't like. Rocky Top is not Tennessee's fight song. So for 10 time,
it's not.
If you score a touchdown, you play the fight song, not anything else. I can get down with that. Okay.
Rocky Top is not Tennessee's fight song.
I can't imagine it is. I wouldn't. I couldn't tell
their official.
What, yeah, like their official fight song. I couldn't tell you what it is.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Is
that
it?
Makes sense.
Is it though? Let's see.
If only there was a way to find out.
Right. Everybody got Google. Down the Field is the name of it. And they stole it from Yale. Written in 1931, the Yale's song of the same name.
Well, the Y and the T, you just kind of flatten it out. Yeah. It's just, you know.
I've always wanted to pattern my fight songs after the Yale Bulldogs. I mean, that's always been, let's think, but actually they were a football powerhouse.
I was about to say, at that point, Yale was probably one of the leaders in national championships.
Yeah,
and,
Army, Yale. Yeah. Yep.
It's a good point. Give Brett's friends a heads up next time. Yeah, no, we're going to do it. And we're all going to retire early next time because of the questions that we'll get from Brett. No, I guess we'll wrap up here, but man, this is great. Thank you guys both for doing this. This was a lot of fun.
Enjoyed it. Thanks for having
me. Appreciate you, Brett.
All right. Thanks.
Dale, good to see you.
Good to see you, Brett.
All right. The Montgomery radio legend, the Montgomery football legend, and you guys are legendary for being here and being part of the show. If you're not members, please consider becoming members. We have lots of members-only content. And don't forget that the Barn channel on YouTube is live with content 24/7. Until next time, remember, everyone has vices. Make sure Village Vice is one of yours.